Welcome to The Real Love Show on WUAC Radio with Patricia Benjamin. This is The Real Love Show. I'm your host, Patricia Benjamin, and you're listening to WUAC Radio.
This is Paul Carrick Brunson, and you are listening to one of my favorite shows, Patricia Benjamin's Real Love Show.
I'm loving this lady, the fantastic Anita Wilson there, who opens up again in the second hour of The Real Love Show. We're here in the Love Zone. And I've got my fantastic co-presenters today, the beautiful Jo James. Hey there, Joan.
Hi.
And of course, lovely regular Janet McNish. How are you doing there, Janet?
Great, Patricia.
So I hear you're just back from Wales.
Yes.
Did you bring the sun with you, my darling?
Yes, it was here for a little while, wasn't it?
Yes, for a little while. I mean, when I came in this morning, it was kind of going and coming.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Yes, we'll try and do better, Janet.
Yes, I'll have to go somewhere sunnier and bring back even more.
Yes, but when you went to Spain the other day, you done quite well.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need lots of sun. But they do tell us, I think from Wednesday or Thursday onwards, it's going to be sunny.
Yeah. Is it?
Did you hear that?
Well, all I know is I got to put the heater on in June.
Oh,
it's
God.
June.
Did you put your heater on
this
morning?
Yes, last night and this morning, yes.
Oh, gosh, I wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I had mine on yesterday.
Oh, my Lord. Mm. Okay, well, I feel quite good then. Yeah. I didn't put mine on. All right, now, ladies, we're back in our second hour. But before we really get into detail, I want to give a lovely shout out to the very amazing Rachel Leia Doku, who is listening. Hey there, Rachel. Happy birthday to you. Many, many happy returns of the day. Hope you're feeling fantastic. God bless you so much. Thanks for listening in. All right, so Joan and... Janet, I wanted to have a look at something that I saw over the weekend. Quite a few shows we've had so far this year, we've kind of hopped over to Africa, various nations within Africa, looking at, say, tackling hunger, looking at poverty, looking at such issues as child marriage. Something else we looked into very briefly was the FGM situation. And I want to have a look at it today because it seems as though President Goodluck Jonathan has outlawed it, made it illegal in Nigeria. Mm, what did you think on first hearing that?
Wonderful.
Great news.
Yes.
Great
definitely.
News.
Yeah, I thought it's great news as well.
I just think he's outlawed it.
Yes.
What are the... you know, sanctions going to be like now? What is going to happen to them if they are caught doing these things which they were doing before? Because people are still going to try to break the law, aren't they? So what are they going to do? How are they going to punish them?
It's quite interesting because Rebecca Fine, who used to pop in quite a few times to the Ask Patricia show, she commented and said, well, although it's against the law, it's against the law in the US, but they still do it.
Yeah.
And that made me think, gosh, they're probably still going to do it as well.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's no coincidence that President Goodluck Jonathan has signed this into law as he's about to leave. Very timely.
Yep, deal with all of it, you lot.
So I think that's quite significant. Anyway, to help us discuss the situation, oh my God, I'm going to think I'm on the Ask Patricia show any minute now. I've got the lovely Nori Makasowe. I love saying that name. Nori Makasowe, who's joining us to discuss the issue. Noreen, how are you doing?
Hi, Patricia. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, nice to chat with you. How have you been?
I've been well. Bell busy.
Yes.
I'm well. Thank you.
Good to hear. Well, I was just saying to Janet and saying to Joan that when I first saw the headline at the weekend, I thought, oh, that's really great. And I put it on my Facebook page. You know, this is so good. Finally, at last. And then people are commenting, your friend and mine, the lovely Rebecca Fine from the US. She's saying, yeah, well, you know, it's out of it's not legal here, but they still do it.
Yes, it's a very I wouldn't say it's a very cut and dry situation. It's a very complicated situation. FGM has been in existence for decades, even possibly for years, hundreds of years. But it's not something that can just be eradicated as simply as that, because it's such an ingrained practice in certain cultures, and removing it is going to take a re-education of mindset, of practices.
Yes.
And to try and get this culture to change their traditions is not going to be as simple as passing a law.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, something you and I were speaking about offline is that so many women actually embrace this anyway as a rite of passage, because I'm thinking this is so good, they won't have to go through all that pain. But some women actually embrace it.
They do. I'm from Kenya originally.
Right.
And Kenya has got very many different, let me call them tribes, different dialects, at least about 54.
Wow.
Now, Kenya is much smaller than Nigeria.
Okay.
You know, Nigeria's population is millions, you know, bordering the millions.
Yes.
And they have, simply because of the number of people in their population, this practice has got a lot more women who've been affected by it.
Okay.
But from the Kenyan perspective, I went to school with women or young girls who'd been through this practice.
Right.
And they embraced it because it's their rite of passage.
Wow.
It gives them a sense of belonging.
Yes.
I cannot say that I identify with it, but listening to them, they didn't seem to be any sense of regret for being a part of it. And I've also spoken with women here in the UK from different countries, some of whom, despite it, do not agree with it, have been to it.
Yes.
But I've also spoken with a woman who embraced it, because for her, it represented belonging to a culture and a tradition that taught her how to be a woman, how to belong, how to embrace her culture, tradition, how to be a woman, how to look after her family. And she was very much against people speaking against it. So it gave me a dual perspective on something that is very, very complicated and yet very personal for so many women.
I mean, you explained that so well, because the thing is, we're looking at it, you know, through very Western eyes and thinking with our point of view, whereas if you're born there and that is your tradition and it's a way of empowering yourself almost and saying, I'm now a woman, and for us to come in as Westerners and say, this is wrong, don't do it, I mean, it's, is it our place to do so for a start?
Honestly speaking, it's a very, again, I say it's a very complicated topic, because for me personally, I can say in my own perspective, I think it's something that damages women in the sense that it makes their lives difficult from a reproductive perspective and sometimes from a health perspective, because they go through very many complications with childbirth or even with being with their partners. But there's also the perspective of women who embrace it. So there's women who are born in those cultures who do not want to go through it, and some who do, simply because they belong to that culture. So from a Western perspective, people coming in and saying, oh, this practice is barbaric, is almost an insult to people who embrace it. So I believe that, from a personal perspective, of course, I believe that for organizations, agencies, international agencies to go in, there's got to be dialogue with the grassroots people, because they practice it. We can't, a law can't be passed from the top down and saying stop it, but the grassroots people are saying, but I don't want to stop it. So if international agencies engage the people in a conversation and saying, okay, this is your culture, this is your tradition, what does it mean for you?
Precisely.
And maybe offer them an alternative, because for them it's a rite of passage. It's something that is important to them. But telling them to stop it is not, is
not sufficient, is it?
It's not sufficient.
No.
Maybe an a healthier alternative, a better rite of passage, a safer, safer, something safer for the women. That is not going to make it life really complicated, because it creates a bigger problem from a health perspective, because all these women have to go to hospitals that might not even have the facilities to cater to the problems that are created by this practice.
Now, listen, obviously, Noreen, this is daytime radio. So would you take a moment and just explain to us, for those who don't know what it is, we've heard the expression, but we haven't really understood it. And can you tell us in a very basic way, bearing in mind this is a daytime show, just what exactly is FGM, my darling? I'll put it all on you.
Oh, you passed the buck.
Yeah,
to me.
I'm good at that.
Well, I'll tell you from my knowledge of reading on the topic, because it interests me because of the work that I do with enhancing human capital. So these are things that obviously impact on the growth and development of different societies, different communities. And from my understanding of what it is the removal. Bearing in mind this is a daytime show. Is the removal of the external parts of a woman's organs that she uses for connecting with her partner. That's the nicest way to put it. And removing them completely for non-medical reasons. And that is what it is in a nutshell.
Now, I mean, I remember, Noreen, I never told you this off air, but I remember speaking to a young lady who had gone through this, and I was in my home. And I felt physically ill. I felt so ill when she was speaking to me, because she actually went into details. She wasn't quite as delicate as you were. And I felt so ill. My gosh, you know. I don't think the blood must have drained from my... I felt very unwell. And I just could not imagine that being done to me. Particularly, sometimes you're told the women don't want it done and they're being held down forcibly. It just seems barbaric, even though it may be the wrong word to use. Perhaps we just don't understand it because of the culture, but it just seems so wrong.
It is wrong. It's a human rights violation. If somebody says no to anything, then their no should be honored as a valid answer.
Indeed.
So if these women are saying, no, I don't want this done to me, and they're forcibly
yes.
held down,
yes.
that is indeed a violation of their human rights as human beings.
It is. But, I mean, tell me why it's actually done. I understand, okay, for some it's a rite of passage, but what is behind it? What is the purpose? What's the thinking? We are doing this to you because. What is meant to be the reason? What does it do?
It's not as straightforward as just one particular answer, considering
right.
that there's so many different cultures that do it.
Wow.
And it's done across so many different countries.
Yes.
I think as just from my reading, there's
yes.
29 countries that are listed as doing this.
Mm.
And on all of those countries except two are in Africa.
Gosh.
So we cannot say that one culture does it for this reason, another one culture does
okay.
it for that reason.
Right.
Most of them, the ones that I am aware of, do it as a rite of passage. It's a woman's crossing over from being a girl into being a woman.
Okay.
Some of them are taken into, they're taken into camp, so to speak, to be taught how to be a woman.
Right.
So you're now no longer a girl. You cannot behave like this. This is how you behave.
Right.
This is how you behave towards men. Men
right.
behave towards you. When you get
right.
married, this is what you do to look after your family.
Yes.
So they're being taught all these things.
Right.
And that particular practice of cutting is just a confirmation for some of them that you have
right.
gone through this process,
right.
almost like a tattoo. Let me, without disrespecting that practice. And then I suppose there's some that do it for control reasons.
Yeah, I was
they want to
say.
Want to keep women in. It's not as straightforward as saying all cultures do it for this one reason.
Right.
In Kenya, I know the women that I interacted with and spoke about it. For them, it was a sense of belonging.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sense of belonging to a powerful group of women who protect their communities, who look after their children, and they're very empowered by it.
Wow.
And then from my perspective, I'm thinking, I would die, you know, if that happened to me. I don't know what I would do. I'd lose my mind.
Yeah.
But then it's a mental thing.
Yes.
It can be very disempowering the
mm-hmm.
way it is delivered.
Yes.
It is disempowering for, say, young girls who were brought up in a Western culture who've never been to any of these countries.
Exactly.
And they have to do what their mother says or their grandmother says
mm-hmm.
or their aunties say,
mm-hmm.
and they don't understand it. So it's very confusing.
Yes.
And I think it's something that I suppose the West wants to regulate and
right.
to make sure that the long-term repercussions of this practice
yes.
Are dealt with now
mm-hmm.
because, you know, they go on and on for years, from counseling to therapy
yes.
to medical medical help and surgery.
Gosh.
It is a very,
it's
very
a
complicated.
Lot.
It is a lot.
Oh, my
God. It really
is. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the control. And that's one of the things that have been put to me. I think one of the shows we did on the Love Talk show, we did talk about, we had a sex education for adults show. And somebody talked about the control in the sense of the sexuality of the woman. It's as though she wasn't allowed to have pleasure. Is that a part of it as well?
I believe it is.
Yes.
I believe it is. And this one I draw from a history lesson when I was in high school.
Right. Oh, gosh. Well done to you. 10 out of 10.
That's how far back this has been going on. So,
wow.
You know, I learned it in a history class that in some cultures, it was done so that women did not stray. It was done so that a woman was faithful. She did not stray from her home.
Wow.
And there are certain cultures in Kenya, for example, where the woman was not just the mother or the wife, she was also an entertainer.
Wow.
If that makes
really?
Sense. I know. Yeah.
Gosh.
So if, say, a man came to visit,
yes.
A man had visitors, his friends came to visit,
right.
his friends were allowed to have their way with the wife because
oh,
that is her
gosh,
role
you're
in the
joking.
Culture. I'm not joking.
Oh, no, I can't
this
believe
is a historical.
It.
So the removal of that meant that she wouldn't engage in it too much for her own pleasure. It was simply a practice that made the man who he was. He was the leader of the homestead, and she entertained his friends whenever that was needed.
Oh, my God. You can imagine. We're all sitting here, Joan and Janet. We're all holding our heads and thinking, how? I don't. But wouldn't he, as the man, that's his wife, why would he have her as a piece that somebody could entertain themselves with?
because it's part of that culture. It
right.
is not something that's widespread. I'm not saying it's widespread across
yes.
very many different cultures,
yes.
but there are cultures like that exist where, for example, when the man's friends came round and somebody was in there with his wife,
yes.
then they put a spear outside to mark that I am in here, nobody should come in. So I wish I knew the book to share
right.
so people can read and Google it, but
indeed.
This exists, and
wow.
and it's something that I learned in history. For me, it was just part of a history lesson.
Right.
But obviously, being grown up now and doing the work that I do, the long-term repercussions of this practice
yes.
are abhorrent. And,
of course.
And they really affect families, women, families, for a very, very long time.
Yes,
and
indeed.
And our hope is that this law that was passed by Goodluck Jonathan
yes.
will be a beginning, at least,
yes.
of dialogue between
yes.
the policymakers and the grassroots people
mm-hmm.
on how to change this thing
right.
so that it's not affecting so many women in such a negative way.
Precisely. Oh, my gosh. Well, listen, Norwin, we're going to take a tiny break at this time, but let's come back on the other side and talk about some of those long-term, just really the reprisals, really, what happens on the other side.
Okay.
All right.
Ruwek City Church Singles Ministry presents...
Relationship.
Uncovered.
Part
2. This will be taking place at Ruwek City Church, Kilburn, 197-199 Kilburn High Road, London, NW6 7HY.
Do you have any unanswered questions regarding relationships?
Come and join in the discussion with our panel of experts who will share their experience on relationships and answer any questions you may have on Christian dating, marriages, single parenting, divorce, and much more.
Don't miss this event. This will be your opportunity to ask questions you always wanted to know the answer to.
So join us Friday the 12th of June.
Relationships
Uncovered
Part
2.
Doors open at 6:30 p.m. Event commences at 7 p.m. sharp. Relationships
Uncovered
Part
2.
Now available to a worldwide audience. The all-new Ruwek City Church online store. Hosting preaching messages, books, music, and much more, this is your place to purchase inspirational products and experience Ruwek City Church at the click of a button wherever you are. Whether it be a Sunday service message or a powerful conference message, you'll be able to purchase MP3 audio and MP4 video downloads, as well as CDs and DVDs, receiving the Word of God in an instant. You'll also be able to take advantage of the many great ministry products from Bishop John Francis and Co-Pastor Penny Francis. Log on today to www.ruwekcitychurch.org and visit our online store, where everybody is somebody.
Hi, this is Bishop John Francis. Join me every Tuesday between 6 and 7 p.m. on the Bishop John Francis Show, brought to you by the Pentecostal Credit Union, shaping lives and making a difference. We're going to have some great music, lively conversation, and lots of information regarding business and finance. That's every Tuesday between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m. on the Bishop John Francis Show, brought to you by the Pentecostal Credit Union, shaping lives and making a difference.
Hi, this is Sherry Dixon, public speaker. I love listening to Patricia Benjamin on Ruwek Radio. It's awesome.
Challenge what the future holds. Try and keep your head up to the sky. Lovers, they may cause you tears. Go ahead, release your fears. Stand up and be counted. Don't be ashamed to cry. You gotta be bad. You gotta be bold. You gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard. You gotta be tough. You gotta be stronger. You gotta be cool, you gotta be calm, you gotta stay together. All I know, love will save the day. Herald what your mother said, read the books your father read, trying to solve the puzzles in
gotta stay together. All I know, love will save the day. Time asks no questions. As your day unfolds, challenge what the future holds. Try to keep your head up to the sky. Lovers, they may cause you tears. Go ahead, release your fears. My, oh my, hey. You gotta be bad, you gotta be bold, you gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard, you gotta be tough, you gotta be stronger. All I know, love will save the day. You gotta be bad, you gotta be bold, you gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard, you gotta be tough, you gotta be stronger. You gotta be cool, you gotta be calm, you gotta stay together.
This is Lamar Tyler from BlackAndMarriedWithKids.com, and you're listening to Patricia Benjamin's Real Love Show.
Yes, you are. Welcome back. Well, today, a bit of a hot topic here, talking about FGM. It's been signed, and it's now illegal in Nigeria. And President Goodluck Jonathan has signed the papers and says it's no longer legal. And we're speaking here, and I've got Joe James with me, Janet McNish, and the lovely Noreen Makisere is joining us on the telephone. Now, Janet, you had some issues, some comments there you wanted to read out for us.
Yes, on the NHS UK website,
yes,
it says that it's estimated over 20,000 girls under the age of 15 are at risk of FGM in the UK each year.
Okay. Under 15?
Under 15, yes. Okay. And that 66,000 women in the UK are living with the consequences. But regarding the under 15-year-old girls, 20,000, it says here that the girls may be taken back to their countries of origin so that this can be carried out during the summer holidays and allowing them time to heal during the summer holidays before they go back to school.
Right. Oh, gosh. Yeah. So perhaps that was happening when we were at school, but we didn't know.
Yeah,
nobody would have told me that. In fact, when I was in school, there's literally just a handful of girls that were from Africa and were different African nations. Mm. And they probably weren't, we didn't have that closeness for them to actually tell us that which was going on. But Noreen, are you aware of friends of yours that were going back home to have this done?
No, personally, I grew up in Kenya. I was born and brought up in Kenya. I came to the UK at the age of 17.
Right.
But like I said to you, when I was in high school, there was girls who went through this.
Yes.
And for them, it was their culture, and they embraced it. They didn't seem traumatized by it. They actually seemed very proud of it. But I suppose it's how it's carried out, because the practice is carried out, although it sounds very similar, I suppose the way it's done is different in some cultures.
Right, that's true.
Yeah,
that's true. So when they're talking about living with the consequences, what are the long-term consequences? Because if it's been given or told to you as a good thing, it's a powerful thing as a woman, what are the consequences that perhaps aren't so good?
in my opinion, it appears the consequences are more bad than good. Other than the fact that quite a lot of women die simply from the procedure happening, there is obviously psychological, physical, emotional consequences that they have to live with for life. Some women literally die because you know, nerve endings are cut and vessels are cut and they hemorrhage to death.
Lord.
And the shock, I mean, I'm shocked when a pin, you know, pierces my hand or something.
Yes.
So imagine just being physically with, you know, with no anesthetics or anything, taking away the pain. You can see it. You're awake. You're alive. You're actually experiencing the pain. The shock of it, the trauma of it that you have to get over it, you know, maybe days, months, years to come. Some women never really get over it. They don't want their husband to come near them because of the sheer pain of how it's done.
Yes.
Tissues heal differently.
Right.
And in certain parts of North Africa, Northeast Africa, for example, they go the step further. Other than just cutting off the outer, I have to be very careful because this is a daytime show.
Yes.
Other than just cutting off the external organs, they actually sew them up.
Good grief. Mm-hmm.
They sew the outside so there is no activity taking place
at any time. I saw that. They filmed that. I saw that being filmed. This is many, many years ago. And I thought, that traumatized me. This is probably more than 30 years ago.
Wow.
But I'm reading in Wikipedia and it says, the fact is we call it FGM.
Yes.
But then what do, you know, people
that's
in
true.
Africa
what
call
it? What is the name? Yeah. What do they call it?
Because we're seeing it as a mutilation, but if you're in Africa, you're not going to refer to it as FGM, as a mutilation.
Exactly. This is a point that, you know, I mentioned to Patricia, and we spoke about offline earlier, is obviously because there's labels.
Yes.
And the West has to give something a label in order to give it a meaning, in order to pass a law against it.
Yes.
And the West calls it mutilation. And I've spoken with women who've been through it that do not want to be called mutilated because it's very disempowering for a woman who has been through the practice to now be told you're less than a human being because you've been mutilated and now that, you know. So some women do not agree with the term mutilation.
Yes.
They want to maybe call it cutting.
Right.
In Kenya, it's called circumcision.
Okay.
You know, just like the men are circumcised,
women
are circumcised. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the West obviously gave it the FGM title, and the label because it's how they understand it to be, and because for them it's such a horrible act.
Yeah.
It's like mutilating a human being.
Mm. But can I say, Maureen? Sorry to interrupt
that's
you.
Fine,
but
that's,
it says it's FGM has been outlawed or restricted in most countries in which it occurs, but the laws are poorly enforced, and that's what we were saying at the top of the hour. That, you know, who is actually going to enforce it? Because the West may come in, but are they going to be the ones enforcing the law? They're not really, are they?
No, and this is the challenge that this law, for example, the one that has been passed in Nigeria recently, these are some of the challenges they have.
Right.
Is you pass a law without any strategy to enforce it?
Yes.
Because this is an ingrained practice in certain cultures.
Yes.
And these are practices that are embraced by the people.
Okay.
So obviously the law has been passed to say it's against the law.
Right.
And obviously if young women don't want it done, they can say my human rights have been violated.
Indeed.
But how do you go into grassroots, you know, civil society, grassroots, where the mothers are doing it, the grandmothers are doing it, and if you dare to go and ask the question, they will not tell you who has done it because it's part of their culture. So who is going to enforce the law except the grassroots people?
Yes.
And this is where the conversation comes in, that a law like this has been passed. Now the dialogue needs to begin with the grassroots people and educate them on the consequences, the long-term consequences, because for them, they do not see them as negative consequences.
Wow.
They see them as positive because it's part of their culture.
Wow.
But if they're educated to say that, look, your child is your daughter years from now is going to have problems giving birth.
Right.
She's going to have countless infections that maybe there's no facilities to take care of here where you are, she's probably going to be psychologically traumatized for life. If women are educated to know that, look, I'm actually doing more harm than good,
that's right,
then they might look for alternative ways as rites of passage for this. But for now, the law has been passed, but enforcing it, I think, is going to be a challenge for the powers that be.
I'm wondering what the church has to say about this. Do they provide any sexual health teaching, or do they, obviously you say as it's a cultural thing, does the church then bring a different culture, as in the Christian culture, that may bring a different way of thinking, do you find, Noreen?
I've never heard any church talk about it.
That's a good topic.
The truth of the matter is every church I've heard talk about sex is just don't do it.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. We need to fix up.
I think the church is a powerful entity.
Yes.
Should and could, this is just a personal thought, could wade into some of these very practical issues other than just the spiritual things.
Thank you.
Because the spiritual are great, but they're practical things that people live with.
Yes.
If you're going to, for example, and I think the church does deal with the consequences of cuttings and circumcisions, because you might have a congregation of women who've been through it,
yes,
and they're having marital difficulties, but exactly, you're coming in with prayer, mm-hmm, where the actual need is
exactly
more practical.
That's right. So,
but how also does the church protect these women, mm-hmm, in terms of confidentiality? Because I don't think there's confidentiality clauses in the church.
No, unfortunately.
That governmental information is shared.
Yes.
So do these women feel safe enough to share their personal, their deepest, the darkest issues,
yes,
and go to the leaders of the church? And on top of that, I do not think many churches are equipped to deal with the psychological issues, because for things like this, you need specialists in terms of psychiatrists, therapists, counselors, who are employed to deal with that.
Yeah.
But I think I'm not saying it's the case, but most churches do not have that kind of facility in place.
Yes.
They have spiritual leaders and that's it.
Mm. Yeah.
And the spiritual leaders are very removed from the deepest needs of the practical and physical deepest needs of the people. And I think this is something that maybe the church needs to begin to have dialogue about.
Yeah.
Because you cannot deal with a spiritual matter when the issue is physical. Physical from the beginning.
I so agree. Let me just ask you, Jack, just to come in there as a therapist, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I totally agree. The church doesn't seem equipped to deal with this and many other issues that are related to relationships between, you know, intimate relationships, daytime programme. So I think that there's an organisation called the Association of Christian Counsellors.
Okay.
I'm actually the coordinator for London, and what it does is it has counsellors throughout the country. Mm-hmm. Some are specialised in some areas more than others,
mm-hmm,
and some are able to work with different cultures more than others, some individuals. So I personally haven't, I'm part of the organisation as well, but I haven't worked with anyone directly who has experienced this cutting.
Okay.
However, I have worked with a number of women from African and Caribbean nations,
mm-hmm,
who are struggling with sexual issues.
Right.
Who are struggling with issues to do with intimacy and so on, and the culture of the culture that says they're not allowed to enjoy or talk about such things.
Yes.
You know, and issues from their neglect or any kind of abuse they've experienced in the past, how it's affecting them today.
Mm-hmm.
So they've gone to their pastors or to the church, and because the church try to help, but if they haven't got the expertise, they need to know when to refer on. But people, it's not about failure.
Exactly.
It's not about failure. It's about expertise and specialist training. Please, church leaders, community leaders, know when to refer. And I would actually recommend the Association of Christian Counselors and their website.
acc-uk.
Mm-hmm. acc-uk.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could contact me. Is that right? Yeah, of course. Contact me at janetmcnish.com, JanetMcNish.com. Mm-hmm. You could send me an email or call me through there and I'll see what I could do to help.
Yes, yeah. I noticed, Noreen, I love your Twitter handle here where you're saying we're discussing FGM in Nigeria. Will it work? I mean, that is the question. Is it going to work? I mean, I think it's great that President Goodluck Jonathan has made the decision. I'm thinking that he can do this because he's coming out of office. I mean, do you think that's what it is?
Well, I think it was a very strategic move, if that was intentional, because
yes.
Because there's going to be a backlash.
Of course.
And there's almost guaranteed, in my opinion, and I think there's been reports as well.
Yes.
There's going to be a backlash from the people who are saying you can't outlaw a practice that we've been practicing for years,
yes.
For decades even. So yeah. He's leaving and he doesn't have to take the flak for it. but Buhari, President Buhari, is yes. going to have to.
Yes.
But his saving grace is like, well, the law was there. I just need to enforce it now.
Yes. Mm.
So I think it's very strategic.
Yes.
But it does not remove the need for dialogue with grassroots people.
Mm.
Because the change, we have to ask the question, well, asking the question, is it going to work in Nigeria? We have to look
yes.
at countries like the UK
yes.
that enforce laws.
Right.
They actually have structures in place to enforce laws.
That's right.
Is it working here? It's
Thank
not.
You. Yeah.
And we have to look at the reason why,
mm-hmm.
because the people who practice it are protecting
yes.
the culture.
Wow.
So the only way to enforce it is to engage them in the conversation. And
yeah.
some of them are saying,
yes.
I do not want to let it go.
Yes.
My grandmother did it. My
right.
great-grandmother
yes.
did it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing it to my daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Because for them, they did not see anything wrong with it.
Yes.
But we have to look at now a different generation.
Yes.
Because we have the generation of, let me call them the baby boomers. That's
yes.
what they were called, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you now have a generation of millennials.
Yes.
Who are looking at practices and saying, no,
yes.
I do not want to do that.
Precisely.
I believe this is different. I do not want to live like you.
Yes.
So there's a clash of cultures, there's a clash of generations,
That's right.
a clash of mindsets.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you bridge the gap between the old and the new,
yeah, good
you know,
question.
To enforce something that you want to go on for decades to come.
Yes.
And good luck, Jonathan, as well as the UK and all the MPs of this country who are talking about FGM,
yes.
must not forget that they need to include the people
Thank
who
you.
Have been through it
yes.
in the dialogue.
Yes.
You cannot just pass the law and say it's done
yeah.
because it's not working.
Not that simple, is it? Not
but
that
who,
it's
who not. Brought it in the beginning? I mean, I'm thinking it was men that brought it in, as they say, to control women, but then they now have the women doing the dirty work, as to say, sorry if I offended anybody with that, you know,
you know what, it's for me personally, it goes back to reading the history of Africa when
mm-hmm.
when I was on different African countries. When I was in Kenya, I loved history. I mean,
right.
for me, the history of anything is crucial
yes.
to how that place is going to grow going
mm-hmm.
forward.
Mm-hmm.
And reading the history books, it was introduced, you know, in my opinion, by men.
Right.
Why would a woman say, cut me, like,
yeah,
take it off?
Right. Exactly.
Why would a woman do that? So it was introduced as a sense, as a way of controlling
wow.
the
right.
populations of those different communities.
Yeah.
You know, if a woman strayed back then, for some cultures, she was either ostracized, removed from the community. From some communities, in some communities, she was killed. And
gosh.
In some communities now, women are still killed for straying.
Wow.
So how do you put a control, you know, in that area?
Yes,
men said, okay, this
course,
looks like
yeah.
it's this women looks like they're enjoying too life too much.
Well, you know, the reason I looked at that as well is because
I look
at the Asian culture
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
they had, you know, it's not the same thing, but they had, you know, issues with men going with young girls and so forth, and things that was obviously men controlling women.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
a lot of the times now I look at videos and the women are standing up and fighting back.
Mm.
The difference is the men that are raping the children or doing anything to the young girls, they're actually, the women are actually, you know, taking into their own hands. Some of the men in the town
yeah.
are actually beating these guys that do these things. But with this now, the mutilation, the genital mutilation, they're having women do it, so you can't go and beat your grandma and your mother for
no.
doing it,
can't.
Can you? So yeah.
No, you can't.
Mm.
It is not going to be I don't think there's going to be an easy solution other than engaging the grassroots women.
Yes.
Because if they're carrying it out, we have to understand why they're carrying it out.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't just outlaw, well, it can be, and I think it should be outlawed in my personal opinion.
Yes.
But we can't do away with the practice of a rite of passage that they value so much.
Mm.
So maybe, and I think it's working, I do need to remember it, but I know it's something that has been initiated by an organization where an alternative is presented to the women. Instead of cutting the
mm-hmm.
women,
mm-hmm.
maybe choose a different rite of passage that is less harmful.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely. So maybe replacing it with something that works.
Mm.
But in many of these African countries,
yes.
it's going to take a lot of dialogue. And I think in my opinion, in my experience and in the work that I do,
yes.
we're also looking at a situation where the West came into Africa, colonized,
mm.
took advantage of Africa, and
this
they were let in.
Yes.
And now the Africans are fighting back and saying, we don't want anything that's related with the West.
This is it.
So if you pass a law like this,
yeah.
they're on the other extreme.
Exactly.
They don't like you, whether
yeah.
you're right or not. They
yes.
don't trust you. They
you're
don't
the
like
enemy.
You. Anything you say is the devil.
Exactly.
So we're looking at two
yeah.
different things. Even
yes.
if the law is, what they're doing is wrong,
yes.
and it's harming their own communities,
mm.
they're saying, you harmed us when you came the first
exactly.
time.
Mm-hmm.
How do we
There's
know
no
you're
trust.
Not going to harm us the second time?
Yes. Yes.
So the reconciliation between the West and Africa
yes.
hasn't taken place.
Not at all.
Because there has been no dialogue
yes.
between them to say that, okay, we did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's just more laws coming and passing sanctions and
That's
embargoes
a,
and saying, if
absolutely.
You don't do what we say, we'll take your help
yes.
and we won't give you any funding for these things. So
yes.
so you have an African mindset that's now on the other extreme,
yes.
that's pushing back and saying, I don't like you. Anything you say for me is irrelevant.
Yes.
Even if you're right,
yeah.
you're not welcome
this is
here.
A thing.
You
this
know,
is a
so
thing.
It is a very complex thing. And
it is.
And again, I go back to the same thing. We need dialogue. We
yes.
need dialogue with grassroots people
it is dialogue.
For this thing to be enforced and to work.
Yes, indeed. Good points. We're just about finished, but Janet, you had your hand up. What's that you wanted to add there?
Just tagging on to what you're saying about the church being involved. You know, churches have a great ways into different communities and building trust. And I think this needs to be part of the mission. Facilitating
yes.
that dialogue.
Yes.
You know, churches of different denominations in different nations,
getting
supporting
involved.
The people on grassroots,
yes.
Helping people to restore the dignity
yes.
of, you know,
their
dignity
mm-hmm.
as people made in the image of God.
I like that so much.
I agree with you. Just to add on really quickly to what
yes.
you said, the church has a lot of impact in Africa.
Yes.
And I think that maybe leveraging that impact
yes.
to begin this dialogue of
yes.
reconciliation or,
yes.
or maybe collaboration to make a change would be really powerful.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Very much so. Did you have a closing thought, Joan?
Yeah, just
minutes.
You know, what about asking the women who performed this now, how did you feel when it was done to you? Because
right.
that's a trying thing.
Yes.
They can't say, oh, I felt great.
Mm.
They're gonna have to say the truth. Why
right.
would you then want to pass this on to your next generation?
Yeah. That all needs to be included. Well, Nori, I'm so out of time here, but I want you to take 10 seconds if you can. I like your phrase, enhancing human capital. What does that mean before you go?
Enhancing human capital is my belief and my work is that there is no economy, no organization can reach its goals and objectives without enhancing the capital of the people. If you leave the people behind, the community dies, the company collapses, and the country does not go forward.
Mm.
So what we're about is enhancing the human capital through coaching, consulting, training, and having dialogues like this one, collaboration and reconciliation between organizations or between societies to enhance the human capital so societies are sustainable.
Fantastic.
Growth and development is sustainable.
Well, Nori Makasere, you've been a star, and you can see I'm having to rush. I've got the red card, everything. But thank you
thank
so
you,
much.
Patricia.
It's been the
it's
Real
been
Love
pleasure.
Show. If you've loved the show you've just joined, tune in again at 9 o'clock tonight when we do it all again. I'll see you all next time here on RUAC Radio.